Holy crap. I cannot believe that this roster move just happened. I was always holding back just a little bit. Just a little bit. I needed to know. I needed to wait for the official announcement. I wanted just it to be ready. I didn't want to get disappointed. Didn't want something weird to happen. Didn't want like an EG scenario where it's like, yep, they're coming. And then, oh, who knows what happened. Oh, man. This roster is so absurd. Cloud9 Counter-Strike is about to be so insane. All day today was just smiling, knowing what's about to happen in the Counter-Strike scene. I've gone through all the maps. I've watched a demo of each Electronic and Perfecto on every map, compared them to the positions that Nafani and Buster played, and the way they slot in is so perfect. It's going to shore up so many of our weaknesses, including some of our biggest holes in our map pool. It's going to bring way more firepower, way more brains. It's going to be so crazy. But the first thing I want to talk about before I get into all of the maps and my thoughts on this roster and everything is I want to talk about why this move is necessary. Now, Nafani has a lot of support, and I love that. Like, it's very easy to root for Nafani. His energy, like the persona he gives out until like the last few months, is just always very high energy. Like, he's a very fun player to root for. When he pops off on the team, like with his entries and his like aggressiveness, like it can be really, really fun. But when we look through the past results of this team, when they joined Cloud9 a year and a half ago or whatever the date was, I said that I was going to hold this team to being the number one team in the world. I was going to hold them to winning championships. And they did not live up to that. They bombed out of a lot of things that they should have done well in, or they would get to playoffs, even like the Rio Major, where they get to the playoffs and it's like, they're going to win. Like, look at their bracket. They're going to win. And then they just choke. And just the number of times that they would just have the same thing happen over and over and just never being able to get like a real win. Like, they got IEM Dallas and stuff, but that was kind of a scuffed event. Everyone knew it. Like, what other wins do they have on the table? And not only that, this roster missed the major, which cost the Cloud9 org probably $1 million in revenue, maybe more, because this is the last CSGO major. So I'm sure that the Paris capsules are absolutely popping off. They're also the border list, which have always done well in the past. So I'm sure that them missing the major not only cost the players themselves an insane amount of money, but the Cloud9 org probably lost an insane amount of money. And so when you look like through all their results and you try and take like your emotions out of it, and I take the expectations I had when this roster first came, they didn't live anywhere near to the expectations that I was setting them and going to hold them to when they first came. So that's why these moves are necessary. It's also necessary to look at who's coming. So we're getting two just not like stars, but just absolute top tier players. We're replacing our two worst players in IGL, who struggles with IGLing, also struggles with fragging, a support player who doesn't seem ready to kind of be on this team and to be in the upper echelon, with two players who have been there numerous times. Electronic, I mean, we all know his history and how good he is. And Perfecto, 2022 HLTV Anchor Player of the Year, a proven player who is better than the players we're replacing, better than Hobbit 2 probably. When that opportunity arrives, even if you like Nafani, even if you like Buster, even if you are thinking, you know what, we should just give them more time. Maybe they'll gel. Maybe they'll get better. When an opportunity like this happens, you have to jump on it because these don't come around a lot. You don't always get these opportunities to go get just bona fide all-star level players and slot them in perfectly to your already star-studded lineup. This roster is absolutely not messing around anymore. There are no holes. It is just absurd. So you got to take the opportunity when it comes. The results were not there. Missing the major was a huge problem. And then you could see by the end just how torn this roster was. And it just needed to happen. So I want to talk about who's to blame for all of that. So we know that Nafani clearly gets a ton of heat. And I would say it's deserved. But I also think that you can go through every person on this roster and blame them and find ways that they themselves have lost games. So that's what I'm going to do. The first person and the person that I think actually deserves the most blame for the roster is Groove. I think that if you look at what the team has done over the course of this year and a half, and you look at how the team played in the server, you can find a ton of issues or just ways that he could have helped that he didn't. For example, the number of times they took timeouts when they were struggling on T-sides, and then what did they do the next round? The exact same thing. Like, what is being talked about in those timeouts to improve? It doesn't seem like anything in the game is being talked about to improve. Again, we have no comms. I wouldn't be able to understand them anyway. So this is clearly all speculation on Groove. Like, I have absolutely no raw data on Groove. This is all pure speculation. But I'm going to tell it the way that I see it, and the way I see it is that when he's taking timeouts, I'm seeing nothing change. I also think that when Nafani is taking all this heat, Groove is not stepping in at all to try and take any heat off Nafani. He's not doing the after-loss interviews, or he's not doing even after-win interviews or after-tournament interviews or doing any social media posts. Like, there was nothing about him to take any sort of heat off Nafani, which I think a lot of Nafani's heat was based on the calling, based on the strats. I mean, you can look through even the interviews he did directly with Maui Snake, with Maui asking, why aren't you using flashes? And all this kind of stuff. And he never came out to be like, well, it's not just Nafani, it's me. Like, I need to be better. I need to be stratting. I don't know. Just doing anything to like try and help Nafani out while he's like just drowning under this just public pressure and scrutiny. He never stepped in to do anything like that. And it's clear that their system is their system. Nafani's calling, I would say, was not great. His mid-rounding and being able to adapt to when things aren't working wasn't great. But if he's also playing inside the system that Groove has created, then maybe he's doing exactly what he's being coached to do. And so we're flaming him for that, but he's doing exactly what he's being coached to do. So whose fault is it really? I think a lot of that system and stuff also falls on Groove. And I also have been wondering, what are they actually working on in their player breaks? Because they had multiple player breaks while on Cloud9. And every time I was always hopeful, like, okay, they see the problem, surely, because I see the problems, the analysts see the problems. Like, we all kind of are seeing similar things. So they have a month off or 2 months off or whatever. So they're going to come back and have that fixed, right? Then they go through the whole player break and they come back and it's literally the exact same. So what is happening in these boot camps? So what is happening in these player breaks? It seemed like they weren't improving at all. It was just they played the T-sides exactly the same way. Their weaknesses are the exact same weaknesses. Their strengths are the exact same strengths. The map pool is the exact same. So what has been happening? And then there was the roster decision with Inters. Now, I don't know who makes the shots. I don't know if they have a general manager making the roster decisions, and maybe Groove has nothing to do with this. But I'm going to put this also on Groove because that's the person who's in the management that is at least front-facing. this roster move of enters for Buster was clearly just a throw a dart at a dartboard kind of move. It was not the problem at all. Everyone said instantly this was not the problem. Similar to like a basketball trade, like the Lakers trading for Westbrook. It's like everyone seems to know that like that's not going to solve their issues as long as it can make things worse. I'm not saying Buster made things as bad as Westbrook made things for the Lakers, but it's clear when this move happened, it was like a, what? Like your issues are with their strategy. Your issues are with the IGLing and the calling, and your issues aren't with your support player not being good enough. Like Enters was fine in his role. He wasn't like a star his role, but he played his role well and did what he needed to do. And so that move was clearly just kind of like a BS, maybe just, hey, let's just try something new versus actually addressing the problems. So I feel like Groove just was not good at addressing problems, was not good at adapting, was not good at kind of taking any heat off anybody. And so I think that a lot of the blame of the roster should fall on his shoulders. And then secondly, as it has been touted, you know, I think Nafni also deserves a lot of blame. He is very young. He is the IGL. IGLs always get scrutinized very hard. But again, since we don't really know exactly what goes on between the system and what Nafni does, it's clear that, again, that the adaptation was wrong. It's clear that the ability to adapt was not great. And their T-sides, a lot of times when they got stuck, they just continued being stuck and were not able to pull out of ruts. The mid-round calling was not always great. The number of times that he called like aggressive plays versus their ecos and just giving up weapons and giving up advantages on like ecos or force buys were so many. Just not being able to like read the economy maybe, or just bad calling on that kind of stuff. I also think that in interviews, he would just kind of say things like they need to stay confident, or they didn't really seem to know what the problems were, just kind of like an off day. It didn't really seem like they owned up to any of their issues. It all just kind of seemed like, oh, well, you know, like aim was off, so we lost, when I'm seeing clear problems in their CT and T side. You know, you have other analysts calling out different things in their strategies. Like there's is clearly stuff they can be working on to just say like, oh, it was an off day. You know, if that's actually what he thinks, you know, that's a problem. Or is he just saying that because he just wants to do interview answers? I don't know. But if you take what he says at face value, that means that he's not really owning up to any issues or even accepting that there's issues, which is a problem in itself. I like Nafni a lot, but like I said, when they came in, I said they were a championship level team. We never really won. So if you have over a year with no good results, missing a major, bad calling, and you have the potential to go get like one of the best fragging IGLs and a really, really smart player, like, sorry, it's time. You just kind of got to go. For Buster, he didn't have a lot of time in the team. You know, so maybe there's like potential room to grow, but I think he didn't come in ready to go at all. I think he came in looking very rusty. His mechanics were awful. It seemed like his coordination with the team was awful. It could have been nerves, I guess, but it just seemed like he came in just not ready to go, and he didn't really move the needle at all. If anything, he moved it a little worse. Definitely didn't move it in the upward direction. I don't think he's like really to blame for any of the team's success, but he also didn't help at all. And there were definitely times when he hurt. So you could kind of, again, chalk that up to it being a new roster or all that stuff. But when watching his demos, it really felt like there was also a lot of like mechanical and other issues going on. Like the time he was off, he was maybe taking a lot of time actually off instead of being in the grind during that time to get on a new team. And then to talk about the players who are still on the team, but Hobbit has also fallen off a bit for me lately. I feel like on sites, he's getting a lot of like one for one trades as a site anchor and not getting a lot of multi kills like he used to. He's not really creating a lot of space. But he's also now the fifth best player on the team. But I also think that he needs to start showing some more improvement and some more consistency, because I feel like he hasn't been up to form in a while. And also another thing is I feel like he needs to check his frustration a bit, because at least on the last team, he was the vet on the team, right? But he seemed to get tilted and, you know, do the thing where he like something happens and he just like lays, you know, like way back in his chair, just really upset or tilted, like I said, and just is showing a poor attitude when things are going bad. And as the vet, I kind of thought that he should be the one trying to pull them out of that, but it seemed like he was kind of the main one going into that frustration. And you all know, you have friends or whatever, if you play games with people and they start to get tilted, like even if you're not tilted yourself, you just kind of like feel the energy, and then maybe you start to calm less, or maybe when something happens, it just like changes the mood a little bit. Even if you're not personally tilted, it can just really change a mood. And as the vet on the last team, I thought that that was something he really need. And on this team, I think that's something he needs to like just really check on himself. Axel, obviously, while he's one of the best players in the world, he started to overpeak a lot. I think that especially on CT side, he would start. It looked like he felt the need that he had to carry games now. When they were first coming on, the way he played anchor roles is he would do a lot of kills, move back, kill from another angle, wait for a teammate. Like the way they traded off of each other and Axel played with the team was just so good. And then by the end, it would be like, I remember multiple times, specifically on Inferno, when he's up on top of balcony on A site on CT, and you know, the other team comes out of balcony and he gets the first kill. And like, what does he almost always do? And what do most players always do? They get that first kill, they drop off, they play like mini pit, or they, you know, they throw some sort of utility, or you know, something happens. But multiple times he would get the first kill and then he wide swings that balcony door and there's someone else there and he just dies. And it's like, now the whole site is gone. Whereas if he just got the first kill and fell off, they then can bring in other people. He can then potentially get another kill. They got to use utility or get him out of there. Like all these different things. And there's multiple times like that on many different maps where he just seemed to need, like, he's like, I got to get this multi-kill, just holding down sprays, all this kind of stuff. Even in to make the major when they were playing G2 on Inferno, when the team, you know, obviously made a miscall. And they said, oh, B, 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 B. So he leaves A site as the only person on A site. And he goes library. And then they come A. They come down lane. So rather than they're in an advantage, they're in like a 3v2 or 4v3 or something like that. I think it's a 3v2. And rather than just holding that advantage for the 3v2, he then tries to get in an extended range fight from them, from library all the way down to short. And he loses. And now the round is just lost. Where they made the back call B, he needs to just, again, play his life, play the advantage. So it seemed like a lot of things changed for Axel, where he went from this just super methodical, like slice you and dice you while he's holding the site, to kind of a, okay, I got to hold down mouse one. I got to get multiple kills. That's the only way we're going to win is on me. So I'm hoping that he's going to get back with this team to having the trust and the level in his teammates and just the stability to play like that, because that's how he needs to play, and that's where he is just in an absolute god tier of CT players, is when he can just play around and play his life as well as just getting kills. And then Shiro, there were also many maps where he would make poor decisions, like going to peak top mid on Inferno completely solo, losing the op, losing that entire area of the map, no one there to trade. A lot of times he would die without trades, or if they're like in 4v2s, he then goes out to search and find them and dies, and then all of a sudden it's a 3v2, just trying to make a lot of solo plays, a lot of overpeaking, just kind of like giving up his life. And there was just a lot of maps where he just wouldn't have any impact. And as the number three player in the world, that's not acceptable. So I think everyone on this, I think you could look through all their past results, and we could find maps and rounds where you can pinpoint a player and be like, eh, like you lost this round. Oh, if you would have done better on this, just like basic fundamentals, then we would be better. And that's kind of how the whole team like looked by the end. There were so many like just basic fundamentals that were completely gone on this team. And I think that that could be due to team chemistry, could be due to stress, could be due to a lot of different things, but the just basics of just like trading, taking space correctly, like the number of times where there's like multiple people moving to an area together and then one peaks, the angle dies, and then the other person's like too far away to do anything. And so it's like, okay, well, I guess now it's a 4v5, or just the lack of utility and the player with all four pieces of utility going in first and dying, and the person behind them like not having much, just like very basic stuff that can just continue to up and up and up the percentages of them winning every rounds and the number of like anti-ecos and stuff they lost. So just the basic fundamentals just got so bad. And when you watch like Sweetie Pot's vlogs, which if you're not subscribed to Sweetie Pot's YouTube video or YouTube channel, his vlogs are so incredible. He does such a good job, and you get to see so much behind the scenes of the team. Like, I obviously don't follow like the socials and stuff of any other team, but it's got to be up there with just the being able to see the back end, being able to see them travel, get to see them interact, get to see them laugh. Like, it's a fantastic series that he does. I think he probably does like one a month, or like one per big event or something. I'll link his channel down below. If you haven't seen his vlogs, they're fantastic. And they give a lot of like really good insight. And even for the first bunch of them, I couldn't really understand anything they were saying, just had like Google's auto translate captions. You can just see people's faces and see like the way they interact to kind of get a gauge on how the team's attitude is, or with the way that they like each other. You can kind of just, you know, infer different things from it. And so the chemistry in their latest video of his, I thought still looked pretty good, like outside the server. But inside the server, when you're watching the game, there was something that was like just so off. Like, so early in a map, Shiro is already like head in hand. Axel's got his head in his hand, Naf, and he's like no longer saying anything, like no emotions from anybody. Just you could clearly tell that there was like something wrong. And whether they already knew roster moves were coming at that point, I don't know. They were just so like beyond broken. That's just how it was. I don't know, but there was clearly something wrong by the end, and they had had enough time in passing with like their break before that to already be this tilted. Moves had to happen regardless of whether it was Electronic and Perfecto. Something had to change to just rewire the chemistry, because they were clearly just like kind of mentally breaking. And like I said before, shots like this just don't happen. You have to take them when you can. It's like when a big player like Simple or Zai, like if a player like that is on the market, not that Electronic is up there, but he has been, you know, he's been a top 10 player, and Perfecto is also a really solid player. He hasn't been top 20, but he's been an extremely solid player. When a chance like that happens, and like they're both Russian, the whole team is Russian, so they understand the same culture, they understand the same language, they don't have to go international. It's just the roles are just so wildly perfect that an opportunity like this, just you can't pass up on this. Now, they talked about it being $2 million for the players. I think there's absolutely no way it was $2 million, because first off, you can go watch like any esports news channel about how little money this scene has. So I don't think dropping $2 million for two players would be really on the table, unless it literally is Simple or Zywoo. And two, they wanted to make changes anyway. It's not like Cloud9's coming in and stealing these players or like giving them an offer they can't refuse. I don't think Electronic is worth $1 million. Perfecto is definitely not worth $1 million. So I don't think it's anywhere near 2 million. I think maybe 1 million would be okay, I guess. Even that feels high. But if you think about it in terms of opportunity cost, Cloud9 missing the last major cost them over $1 million. So if they paid $1 million, like, to just basically have a roster that is going to, like, 98-99% guarantee make the major, then you do that versus a roster that's clearly broken and isn't making the major and losing to all these teams. And I don't know if we'll ever find out how much money there was. Like, sometimes Jack seems to talk about things, like, in the future about how much money stuff was. I don't know. We'll kind of see. I don't think it was anywhere near $2 million. But when something like this happens, you have to take it. And this again shows that Cloud9, and this is important, Cloud9, the team that I'm assuming you root for if you're watching this video, is willing to spend money to have a top team in the world. And we've seen this a number of times. We saw them try to go kind of budget with the ATK lineup, but then we saw them drop tons of money for the Colossus lineup, and they got wrecked by the community for how much money they spent. And that never made sense to me, because as a fan of the team, I want the team who's willing to just spend crazy cash to try to compete. Like, people making fun of Cloud9 on how much they spend, like, yeah, awesome. Like, I would love for you to make fun of me about that. I'd rather be made fun of about that than be a fan of a team who, every time I like a player and it's like, oh my gosh, we have such a good player, they're gone. They just get poached by someone else. Like, that sucks. So to be on one of the teams that's willing to just drop fat stacks for, like, hey, we have an opportunity to have the sickest roster on paper ever, we're going to do it. Like, be proud of that. Be proud that this org is willing to just drop it for that. Like, when people make fun of how much money they spend, that's like telling someone, like, hey, like, you have too many new, like, nice cars. Like, oh, like, you have your own private jet. Like, I don't know. it's just making fun of being awesome, I guess. So let's talk about Electronic and Perfecto fitting in with the team. So Electronic and Perfecto are just, like, straight up better players than both Nafany and Buster. Like, I don't know if anyone is thinking that isn't true. Just in rating alone, Electronic 1.11 rating versus Nafany 1.02. All these ratings are going to be from the last 6 months. Perfecto, 2022 anchor of the year. I don't think anyone's voting Buster for anything other than being a bust. So let's go through each map and let's talk about each map. So for Ancient, Electronic a 1.07, Nafany a 0.98. And I'm going to compare Electronic and Nafany's ratings for every map, because they play almost the exact same freaking spots in every map. And we're upgrading from Nafany to a player who is significantly better in almost every spot on every map. So anyway, so on Ancient, Electronic and Perfecto, like, slot in perfectly for them. They take the B side roles, with Perfecto lurking towards B on T side, which is where Buster played. And then Electronic plays Cave on T side, which is where Nafany played. Now, can you imagine on Ancient, a map that Cloud9 was pretty good at, you're going from a 0.91 T side rating of Nafany at Cave to a 1.07 at Cave. That's a gigantic difference in a very important spot of the map. And then for the lurker role, you're going from a 0.97 for Buster to a 1.15 for Perfecto. So in those two roles, you're going from sub one rating, some significantly sub one, to some significantly above one in those two roles. And then Shiro, Axile, and Hobbit will just continue to do their thing on the rest of the map. Like, that's going to be absurd. That's such an upgrade. It's going to be crazy. So then on Anubis, we have Electronic at 1.12, Nafany at 1.09. Electronic plays mid T side, just like Nafany, and they have pretty comparable ratings. Electronic might be, like, a little more passive mid. I mean, it's hard to tell because there's just so few Ancient matches. But on CT, Electronic has a better rating than Nafany, and again, they play the same spot. Perfecto plays Hobbit spot on T side Anubis, like in the water area. This kind of gets into how I would have Cloud9 change the roles. because Hobbit and Perfecto kind of clash a little bit on like a little less than half the maps. And I would probably have Hobbit take all the buster spots. I would just give Perfecto every spot and just kind of like make Hobbit move. Because again, he's the vet. He's the fifth best player. Perfecto 2022, our anchor player of the year. He wants to anchor a spot instead of Hobbit. See ya. So Perfecto plays Hobbit spot, which is water. So I'd have Hobbit taking buster spot, which is lurking towards B. That's not really kind of what the Hobbit does, is kind of lurk. So maybe they'll have Perfecto do it. I don't really know. I don't think either way is wrong. But I would probably just give Perfecto whatever he wants and just make Hobbit figure it out. On CT, Perfecto also plays Hobbit spot, which is in the connector. And even though Hobbit actually has a better rating in connector, which I thought was wild, because every time I watch Anubis, I feel like on CT, Hobbit is dying in connector. But Hobbit has a really good rating. So that was definitely interesting, because my eye test there was off. But I'd probably still give it to Perfecto and just let him, again, play the roles that he wants. If Perfecto wants to change, then cool, keep it with Hobbit. But if Perfecto's leaning towards keeping it, I would just make Hobbit move. So then on Inferno, this is important. Inferno is a very important map. It's played constantly. I don't know statistically wise if it was one of our worst maps or not, but Inferno B site on CT, I will say, was our worst CT site in the whole map pool. We were unable to hold B site Inferno, and if you go watch all of our losses, the teams that beat us on Inferno, when they're on T side, they just go B over and over and over and over, and they just destroy that site. The maps that we win, teams will lean A, or they'll go pretty 50-50. Like, teams who just punish B, they just destroy it. Our B site was so bad. It was just free reign all the time. And if I was ever playing us, I would just be like, I'm literally not going A. I'm just going to crush B. So we're now taking our B that gets crushed. And guess who plays B? Electronic and Perfecto. So that's perfect. So we're, again, taking Electronic. 1.17 rating on Inferno. Nafni 1.01. We're taking Electronic, and we're putting him in Banana. And we're taking Perfecto, and we're putting him on B site. And now Hobbit is going to have to move over towards A, because he was playing on B with Nafani. It's also going to be a really nice transition, because obviously Electronic and Perfecto know how to play B site together. So there's not going to be any like having to learn how to play the site together. They know how to play it together. And so that's just going to immediately significantly increase the hold of that side of the map and shore up our biggest weakness in the entire map pool. We were already great on Inferno T side. Awful at B site on CT. That's going to be absolutely amazing, and I think Inferno could become one of our best maps. Electronic plays the more forward role on B side, like more in Banana than Perfecto does, and so Perfecto is going to kind of become the site anchor on B after, you know, stuff gets like blown up on Banana, and that's going to be replacing Nafani, and that's just going to be such a big upgrade. And then on the T side, Electronic is like just the perfect support player. He takes all the crappy weapons. He's dropping stuff for others. He's flashing people at Banana. He's going to get everyone to their spots. Now, Perfecto plays Banana, which is actually kind of where Axile plays. So I kind of wonder if they can let Axile take like the Apps Lurk, because Hobbit was doing the Apps Lurk, and just let Axile kind of be playing late rounds, be playing the slower style to try and find kills versus him being the first one in. And doing all the craziness that comes up with Banana. So it'll be interesting to see how the team changes there. But I would assume that they would kind of just give Axile the more later round and let Perfecto just continue working up Banana with the way Electronic uses utility for him. So that's going to be an interesting thing. Inferno is going to be amazing. Mirage, Electronic 1.09, Nafani 1.0. I'm assuming you're seeing the pattern here. Just every map is like this. Electronic plays connector just like Nafani. Like, we're now taking our worst player, who is holding connector, arguably the most important spot on the map, and dropping Electronic in there. Like, that's going to be a huge upgrade. Electronic does a great job holding connector and window. He supports the AWPer really well. That's going to be amazing for Shiro. He's also just a great sight holder and works well rotating. on T side, he plays an Axile spot. So my guess is that Electronic will actually just shift over and take Nafani's spot playing mid and just let Axile continue to do what he does, going underpass and doing that kind of like B-side lurk. Perfecto plays Axile spot on CT over up on Cat, like forward B. So I'm guessing that Perfecto's going to move to B anchor here, since Hobbit plays A and is typically pretty good. But Hobbit also has kind of fallen off. So I guess it'd be up to Perfecto if he feels more comfortable moving from mid B site to A, or moving mid, like forward B site to static B site. The other rotation I could see is I could see them wanting Perfecto and Electronic to continue playing mid together, throw Axile as like the A anchor, and then throw Hobbit as the, you know, B player. I can see any one of those things happening. I think they're all okay. I'd probably give Perfecto A and just put Hobbit at Van, jump spot naps. That's probably what I would do if I could choose one. But I don't really think you can go wrong. We've seen that the number of times Hobbit has been able to multi-kill on A site. So whatever they choose, the sites are going to be completely locked down. Our CT side is going to be even better than it already was. The Nuke, obviously Old Cloud 9 didn't play Nuke. Electronic had a 0.98 rating on Nuke. He plays outside on CT. I'm going to talk in a little bit about what maps I think we're going to have. But if we play Nuke, this would be such a good pair. He has a 1.17 rating on CT side. He plays a number of rounds outside solo. He's fairly passive, but he holds it really well. He plays outside as well on T side. Perfecto plays Hut on CT side. And him and Electronic they should have good chemistry, you know, playing Hut and playing like Mini outside. They should have pretty good chemistry over there. So if you take that and then you put Shiro outside and rotating all around where Op does, you put Hobbit on A site and then Axile on ramp, I think our CT would be pretty strong on Nuke. And then on T side, Perfecto plays like the lobby lurk, which is where the support player would play. So that's kind of perfect. And then let Axile and Shiro like play outside, or and then Hobbit play towards ramp with, you know, Electronic playing outside or supporting or whatever he wants to do. Then overpass, again, perfect replacements. You're taking Buster and Nafani, who play both on B site, and replacing it with Electronic and Perfecto, who both play on B site. The one difference is that Buster always played Monster and Perfecto played like Pillar. So Hobbit would probably have to go from Pillar down to Monster. The replacing them on B, Nafani was really good at getting early damage from spams, like really good. That is something that was one of Nafani's best strengths, was overpass, being able to get early damage through spams through that wood panel on B site. Electronics spends a lot more time on A than Nafani does. Like on Cloud 9, it seemed like Nafani was always starting B, always starting 3B, and just letting Axel and Shiro like do whatever they want on A. Electronics spend a lot more time towards A than Nafani did. But that might change, and it might be similar to having 3B, just because Shiro and Axile are so good at what they do that they don't need a third A site. They can just start 3B and just let Axile and Shiro figure it out until they actually need help. Our A site on overpass, probably the best in the world. Our A site overpass hold is so absurd. No one can get into it. Late round, mid round, at any point, like our A site hold is so good. The like one way smokes we have, the trading that we have, the like wall bang, it's just, it is so good. But the B site is where we always struggled. Now, if you can imagine, you have Buster, Hobbit, and Nafani there. So clearly that's going to be a harder site to get into, or an easier site to get into. But we're taking, again, a B site that we struggled to hold. A site, best in the world. B site, struggled to hold. And we're dropping these two players in there with significantly better ratings, significantly better players. So now both sites are going to be extremely hard to get into. Our CT side through every map is going to be so insane. On T side, Perfecto plays Axile's spot, lurking like outside B. I don't really care who keeps it. Like, I guess give it to Perfecto and let Perfecto lurk on that and let Axel just kind of roam around the map. But again, whoever's comfortable, let them do whatever they want. I don't really care who ends up getting that spot. I think both would be totally fine. Either decision works for me. Vertigo was Navi's ban, so Electronic has no data on it. Vertigo, Nafani had a 1.09 rating. Vertigo was the map that this roster made their name on. Their Vertigo streak, their were number one in the world in Vertigo, like all that stuff. But, and again, it's hard to say because the chemistry was like so off on this team. But if you look through the last 3 to 4 months playing Vertigo, we were getting owned on Vertigo. You know, going from like up 13-2 or whatever it was, 14-1 or something, versus like Vitality and then losing on CT side Vertigo. Just the number of times we were just getting owned. Like, our Vertigo was not great. It went from being very confident to just being extremely shaky. So Nafni played ramp on CT side, and then he also played ramp on T side, like a very aggressive ramp on T side. So if we do pull that into the map pool, I would expect Electron to take over ramp on both sides. I would expect him to be way less aggressive on ramp on T side. But I would expect him to be better on ramp on CT side. And then Perfecto would hold mid and rotate B, which is where Buster played. Axel typically holds A by himself for a while. And then the mid player rotates over if Axel needs help. So I'd put Perfecto there holding mid, rotating B. Think he should be totally comfortable there. So which map do I think they're going to do? Between Nuke and Vertigo, I have a feeling we're going to drop Vertigo. I think the team has been bad on it recently. And I think that this team would be so good at Nuke. Like, I think Nuke might have, my suspicions on why Nuke might have been our permaban before is because if you think about the way we always played, dry peeking angles, just playing slow to create space, Nuke is a really tough map to do that on. Because where can you go? Like, you can't really, like, dry peek ramp. Like, you're just going to die every single time as you're, like, just dry. There's only one angle to come out ramp versus a lot of angles to hold. And then to go onto A site, it's like you got to have utility heavy executes because, again, there's this teeny little doorway to come out or another teeny little doorway to come out. And then if you're going outside, you can be checking spots, but there's just so many places for the CTs to be. It's you need to use a lot of utility on that map, and we don't do a lot of that. Like, we can't do a lot of just dry walking around. Especially versus Oppers, they're just going to eat you alive. So that's kind of was my suspicion on why we didn't play it, is I think our T-sides, it just didn't make sense. But now, like our CT-sides, like if you're putting Shiro outside with the electronics help, playing Mini, and then you have Perfecto on Hut, and then I think even though Axel's a better player, I think you put Hobbit as a dedicated A site player, just because he's more used to being a site anchor, where Axel's more used to just like holding an entire half of the map by himself. So if you put Axel ramp, like that's going to be insane. And then, like I said, Hobbit, Perfecto, Electronic all sitting on A site, and then Electronic helping outside with Shiro roaming all around, and like in Oppers Paradise, like I don't see how our CT side wouldn't be amazing. Electronic is going to bring, hopefully, a whole new world of T sides. Overall, it feels like we got a super team. Like, if you go down the roster and you look at all the roles and you look at their positions, and like, it's absurd to think about. Like, I'm even getting like the chills thinking about it. Like, super teams rarely work out. We've seen this over and over and over of rosters who build super teams and they just don't work out. But in this case, like, you look down every single role and it just fits like a glove. And I think that's why, you know, I'm scrolling through Twitter all day today, just like liking tweet after tweet after tweet of people like, this is such a god roster. This is like the best team on paper. Like, oh, it was so good to have like so much like good press, I guess, on Twitter. But that's what the roster feels like. It feels like there's just insane firepower, but it's not just a firepower roster where you're then like shoehorning in a rifler into like a support role. It's like the roles are going to just fit perfectly. And if they don't fit perfectly, you could cut Hobbit for like a dedicated support player and give the other four of the people the exact roles they want and with no like switching around. But even with Hobbit having to change a little bit, I would expect he's going to be totally fine and capable of doing that. They're not having to like force anything here, it feels like. And I think Axile, Shiro, and Hobbit are going to be very comfortable playing with Electronic. I think Electronic is going to be setting Axile up like absolute mad. I don't see a world on T-side how Axile isn't going to be completely unlocked with the way I'm watching Electronic use his utility on T-side. So if they just take some of the ways Electronic plays, and I would assume Groove is going to be open to that, if they take the way that he plays and the way he does his executes and the way he makes space versus the old way that we used to make space, our T-sides are going to become significantly better. I see no world in which our already absurdly strong CT side doesn't get even stronger. Like, I can't wait to run some stats in like 3 months and see how strong our CT side is, because I really think it's going to be absolutely absurd. I think everyone's going to have the space to do what they want. I think Electronic and Perfecto are used to and good at clutching. So we're adding like just another layer of that to that. So again, on a map like Inferno, when they're playing B-site and they're having to come back and play A, they're both great at clutching. They're both just straight up good riflers. Like, it's such a good day to be a Cloud9 fan. I cannot wait to play this roster. Watching Blast right now is absolute torture, knowing that this is coming and we still have to wait like 20 more days or whatever. But man, this is going to be such a fun team to watch. My biggest fear is that nothing changes on the T side, that the Groove's system from the last team gets implemented into this team. But I have to think that Electronic, to bow out of Na'Vi and to come here, he must have had conversations with Groove. And surely that had to be like some kind of conversation where he gets like some say, or they're changing things or whatever. So I think this is going to be a really good test for Groove, and we're going to see what kind of coach he is. We're going to see if he's like a one system, it worked in the online era, it worked when he could talk coach, or is he like a legit coach who sees his roster, sees where they were bad, makes the moves, puts them together, and we just start winning and winning and winning. So I'm hoping that he's up for that task. The other thing is about emotion. The other thing about the last roster, they got a lot of heat for having no emotion. I don't really know if that's changed. I haven't spent a lot of time watching Electronic and Perfecto like player cams and stuff. I'm guessing the team is still going to be fairly emotionless. Luckily, they have Sweetie Pots. Maybe they need to put like Sweetie Pots behind them, and he can just be like doing his thing and bringing all his energy, or he needs to like stand in front of them, in front of the monitors, and just be going nuts or something. Because he definitely seems like an energy guy. But I think we're probably going to have a lot of calmness. But I'm hoping that we can get rid of the tiltness. Because Shiro needs to stop tilting head in hand. Axel needs to stop tilting head in hand. Hobbit needs to stop like flying back in his chair when something doesn't happen and making all those crazy tilt-looking comments and faces. Who knows what was going on mentally with that team. And now they have a fresh start. And hopefully just like a fresh everything. And we all like Naphany. Like, you can even look now on Twitter, there's people still like, my boy Naphany. And I get it. Like, he was a great person to root for. The person who got me into Cloud9 and watching and playing CS, Naphany was like one of his favorite players. He loved watching him. So I get it. Like, he's amazing to watch and to root for. And he seems like a good guy. But he had his chances. He probably had too many chances. And he may grow in the future. But this is a win now team, and we need win now players. We don't need, I'm only 21, I can grow. We need, no, we're trying to win a championship like right now. And that's the team that we have. This is clearly a future number one team. My expectations for the last team was also be number one and win tournaments, but this team better freaking win is all I'm saying. Because if this team comes in with all this and doesn't win, I don't know. That would be insanely disappointing, because this team looks like the best roster on paper ever. Not my words, but multiple analysts on Twitter. So also my words. Well, I don't know enough about history to say that. I take that back. I don't know if it's the best. I've only been watching since like 2017, so I have no freaking clue about history of CSGO. But someone else can make that video on firepower and lineups. I'm just excited to watch this one. I cannot freaking wait. It's going to be so much fun. these next 3 weeks are going to be excruciatingly painful. We need to get this team on the server. Can Blast hurry up? And let's just go win the first tournament, you know? Why not? So thanks for watching. I'm going to be posting just tons of thoughts on Twitter. I, again, have my CSGO scouting site where I do a ton of, like, positional tracking and put together the different roles that people play. You can go to c9win.com/roles right now if you want to go look at the roles that I have defined out on every map that we kind of talked about that I expect. And so follow me there because I'm going to be posting a bunch of stuff about what I see their differences, how they play, what's different. I've watched a lot of Cloud9, obviously. And I've watched a lot of demos of Electronic and Perfecto. So I'm hoping to see some differences, hoping to see some amazing things that we were already seeing. So follow me there. Sub on YouTube if you feel like it. And I'll see you next time. Later.